You are now part of a social experiment.
Welcome to Mastermind, the show where you learn to develop and master your skill from the best of the best. Here's your host, Mr. G.
Thank you for joining us today, guys, on our first official annual Career Day. Purpose of the program today is to give our youth a vision of the future. Although we've been going through a lot throughout these years with the COVID pandemic, we are still capable of achieving anything that we set our minds to. And the folks that we have today that will be sharing their experiences with you guys are an example of just that. When you're listening to what they have done and what they are doing, it's important to understand that they are no different than you, meaning that there's nothing that they have done or that they're doing that you are not capable of doing yourself. So just keep that in mind throughout the course of today. We have our guests here today. They're going to share their stories and what they do. And at the end, we will offer an opportunity for everybody to interact with the guests and ask questions. You are free to ask whatever it is that you would like to ask. So our first guest today is the founder and CEO of Fleeting. It's the fastest growing trucking company in the country. All right, also a multi-million dollar company that Kyrie Irving himself invested into. So let's welcome today, Mr. Pierre Laguerre.
Man, thank you for having me here, man. Really appreciate it. This is actually an honor, to have this opportunity to speak to young brothers, you know, especially that look like me. It's one thing I could say for sure, young men and young women on this call, I wish I had somebody available when I was your age to really talk to me myself. I didn't have a role model. So definitely it's an honor to be here. So, and I think, you know, it's great that you guys are going to learn a lot. I know he talk about, you know, fastest growing trucking company. You guys heard millions of dollars in revenue. It's not far-fetched. It's achievable. But however, I just want you guys to understand that all of that came in with hard work and dedication and faith. So I'd be more than happy to go ahead and share a little bit more about my story with you all. And how did I get here today? By the way, again, I am Pierre Laguerre. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Fleeting. And what Fleeting is, we are a technology company in transportation. In other words, we call ourselves an Airbnb for trucking. What do we mean by that is we allow any individuals from teachers, doctors, lawyers, any regular individual that can own a truck and they can register that truck on our platform. Man, by leveraging technology, we pair truck drivers with those trucks, in a sense, enabling a gig economy for them, meaning giving them the feel like they're operating like an Uber for trucking, so drivers can have a little bit more time at home with their family, and drivers can at least have a social life. I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with the trucking industry with truck drivers. It can be very challenging sometimes. Truckers are spending average 250 nights away from their family. So that's the reason why I decided to build a company that actually solve a problem that I myself have been affected by, because I have about 19 years of experience being a truck driver. And my career didn't start as being a truck driver. And I could just give you a little quick story real quick. I was born and raised in Haiti. Came here when I was 15 years old. And when I came here with a dream of being a neurologist. And one thing I can say for sure is America do a great job at marketing America. So when you live in a third world country, you have this perception of what America look like, right? You see all the beautiful tall buildings, because it kind of looked like America has no challenges at all. It looked like America didn't even have poverty, period. So for me, when I first came here, I said, okay, well, I finally got an opportunity to be a part of this land and actually, you know, become something. I quickly realized where I landed in Brooklyn, I call it the rotten side of the apple. It was East Flatbush, Brooklyn, New York. And I think Questy's here, you know, he could be my witness. He can tell you. And, you know, very early on, I quickly realized in that community, you know, the norm, it was drug dealing, gang banging, seeing young men that looked like me losing their life early, getting 25, 30 years in jail. And for me, it was more like cultural shock. And I quickly realized, I said, man, there's no way I'm going to graduate here alive and become a truck driver. I started really hanging out with the wrong crowd in my community, in a sense, because, again, when you look around where we live or where we come from, there is nothing that remotely look like success. There's nothing that, you know, we can compare to. So for me, I started hanging out with the same people in that community. But I also realized, again, that was not the end of the road for me, and I had to figure something out. Thinking, I went to college and studied electrical engineering, but financially, I really couldn't really afford going to school, because when we came here, it was just me, my mother, and my four sisters. My father wasn't around. So I had no choice but to drop out and finally got my CDL, because that became my exit. I was worrying about getting killed in my own community so much that I had to find a way to get out of that community. It was very unfortunate, but trucking became my exit. I became a truck driver, worked for XPO Logistics. Then I worked for Performance Food Group. Then I also became an owner-operator. Owner-operator means you buy your own truck and you drive your own truck. And learning a lot, I quickly realized trucking didn't have an ecosystem that teach truck drivers how to go from truck drivers to business owners. So I was always eager to learn that. I went to Wagner College and took a course for supply chain logistics. It was about a year course. After that course, then I went to launch a staffing agency in trucking, which I grew to $2.5 million in revenue under 18 months, and also started a trucking company and also grew that to $1.7 million in revenue in the first year. Now, this is something amazing that I want all of us to understand in this call. In 2016 or 2017, while my both companies was running, doing great, I have three beautiful children. My last son was born and he was born with Down syndrome. And I was bitter. I was angry. I lost my faith. I didn't believe in God anymore at that moment. I said, man, there's no way, you know, God, you're going to allow me to have a son with, you know, medical needs or special needs when I've done everything I can in my community to become a better person. So that bitterness in me kind of caused me to lose faith. While my son was in hospital, he had to go through multiple open heart surgery. I remember one night, and this is very important, ladies and gentlemen, be careful with your tongue. Your tongue can be powerful. It can speak life, it can speak death into you. I remember I was just so fed up of going back and forth to the hospital, seeing my son, emergency, internal bleeding. One night, I remember it was Sunday at 8 p.m. I said, man, I'm just tired of this, God. I said, why don't you just blow my head open and take me out my misery? I said this about 8 p.m. You wouldn't believe it. By midnight, about 1 in the morning, I was in the hospital from an attempt carjacking robbery and had my skull cracked open, pretty much. And I almost lost my life. I had 67 staples in my head. Like, you can't see my forehead here. I have a titanium plate in my forehead. I had 67 staples from left ear to right ear. And it was a bad situation. My son was in the hospital fighting for his life. Now I'm in the hospital fighting for my life. If you guys are from Brooklyn, my son was in Downstate and I was in Kings County, two hospitals across the street from each other. And if I tell you that I wasn't bitter, I wasn't angry, I wasn't looking for revenge, I'll be lying. Man, I wanted blood. I want somebody to pay for the pain that I was feeling, for the pain that my family was feeling. But that's when I realized how we as young Black men, we can perpetrate the vicious cycle in our community. And I said, you know what? If I go pick up a gun or a knife and retaliate, what am I going to solve? One, I'm running the risk of getting locked up doing 25 to life. Two, I'm going to take another brother's life that looked like me. That means his mother, his sister, his siblings are going to be in pain. And three, I said, my three beautiful children is not going to run the risk of, you know, growing up without a father in their lives. And that's when I believe God or my faith really kind of got restored. And I said, God, you know what? I'm not going to retaliate. And what I found appalling was America today is short 1 million truck drivers. And I said, this didn't make no sense. How can America short 1 million truckers? Meanwhile, we have communities, especially communities of colors, where young men or young women looking for opportunity, they don't know which way to turn. So we all know how it go. If I can't afford it and I look like somebody that look like they have it, we're going to take it from him. So for me, that became my mission. I said, well, first, how can I really get out this hospital alive? So I said, God, if you get me out of here alive, I will build another company and I will add technology to build a sustainable and successful company. And by the grace of God, I came out the hospital 14 days later and hit the ground running building Fleeting, which is now, again, the fastest growing company to date. I've raised about $3 million from institutional investors. And I also became the first Black man to raise over $1 million on a crowdfunding platform backed by SEC and Republic. And I'm saying this to say, I'm sharing this story here to say, guys, look, I could have easily picked up a gun or a knife and go the other route. But I've decided to say, you know what? This cycle stops with me. If it is to be, it's up to me. How can I become a better citizen for my community? How can I become a better father for my children? How can I become a better friend? And that is what led me to building this company today. And one of our major, major social impact goal is to not only create opportunities for young men or young women in marginalized communities, but also helping formerly incarcerated brothers that are coming out of jail, you know, help them get employment, you know, help them get back into society, because that's one another issue that we deal with. 250,000 men and women are being free annually, but there's no ecosystem that help them with housing employment, and 9 out of 10, they end up right back in the street and they're right back into the prison system. So ever since I came out the hospital, I've made this my life mission, is creating opportunities and connecting with young Black men and young women and really teach them about the power of entrepreneurship, the power of, you know, of being faithful, of having faith in a higher authority, and absolutely the power of community. So thank you for having me here, guys. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you all may have. I know you all gonna go through your own challenges in life. Please do not let that stop you. That's part of the journey. Where you are today did not determine where you're gonna be tomorrow. So don't let anything get in your way today. Whatever you think is stopping you, do not let it stop you. Let it become your stepping stone. And one last note before I leave, which is a quote that I live by myself, is best thing ever invented to mankind is another 24 hours. With another 24 hours, ladies and gentlemen, we can change our biology. We can change our perception. We can change our surrounding and eventually change our reality. So thank you for having me here, Mr. G, and all the beautiful young women and young men in here. Thank you.
Yes, sir, man. Man, I am inspired right now, man. 24 hours. Yeah, appreciate you, man. Appreciate you. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Appreciate the work that you're doing. I think Pierre also just started your own trucking school, right?
Absolutely. So, yes, we just launched Pierre's Academy. So we will be teaching not just only trucking school, driving school. The trucking industry is another part of it that's grown, which is a dispatching market. It's a $5 billion opportunity right now. So a lot of young men and young women can build home dispatching from home. And I know you say your dad was a driver as well. So you've got to kind of deal with trucking. So it's actually showing young men and young women how to become dispatchers where they can make $2,000 a week from home with a laptop and a cell phone. So really want to show them the tools, the blueprint, exactly how I did it myself. And so they can duplicate it and even do it better than me.
There it is, man. And guys, you do not need a college degree to be a truck driver or to own your own business for that matter. So just keep that in mind. Thank you for that, Pierre. Our next speaker is Mastermind's official financial advisor, one of my bros. He's part of a multi-million dollar company that provides financial advising for over 100 clients, anywhere from celebrities, athletes, professional musicians, lawyers, doctors, teachers. He works with everybody. So let's welcome Mr. Kasim Ellis.
What's up, everybody? How you doing? Thanks for having me, Mr. G. This has been, you know, quite an experience watching you kind of progress through this whole thing. So I definitely want to give you props first because, you know, for putting all this together. I know this kind of started out of nowhere and now it's like this huge explosion of inspiration and, you know, props to you to start off from there.
Appreciate that, man.
So just to kind of, I guess, break down what a financial advisor actually is, my primary focus is to basically help people figure out how to take their money and put it in places where it's going to help them to make more money. So essentially, one of the problems that most people face in life is that, you know, we all work really, really hard throughout our lives. And then at some point, you don't want to work that hard anymore. You kind of want to kick back and you want to relax. Now, I don't know if most people know this. I mean, you probably should, but it's like there does come a point in life where your paychecks will stop coming if you stop working, right? So that should be kind of like stating the obvious, but most people don't. I don't think they really acknowledge that. So my job is to kind of make sure that you're putting your money in a place so that way when your paychecks stop, your quality of life doesn't have to suffer. So I do that through multiple different methods of investing or through retirement planning, different things like that. When I first got into the industry, well, actually I'll even backtrack this even further back than that. I will start off by saying I didn't go to school for this at all. So I can't say that I went to school for this. I was passionate about this. I had no idea that the occupation of a financial advisor even existed. So the way that I was approached, I was in college as a computer science major, and I was approached by somebody in Best Buy who was a stockbroker. And the stockbroker said to me, hey, you know, why don't you try to do stocks and you can make a lot of money because, you know, you're good with speaking with people and, you know, you have personable skills. And I said, I have no idea what a stockbroker is. I'm not interested. Have a nice day. Take this computer and go. Like, you know what I mean? I don't want to talk about this. But I went home that day, spoke to my mother about it. You know, I consoled my mom about a lot of stuff, my parents about a lot of stuff. And she was like, you know what? You know, you're 21 years old right now. You can step into that lane, see how it is. And if you like it, then you go with it. If you don't, then you don't, right? So the first thing that I found out about becoming an actual financial advisor or stockbroker is you have to pass this exam called the Series 7. Series 7 is a super difficult exam. So, you know, out the gate, I was already even less interested in this. I was like, oh, I just finished school and now you want me to start and take more exams, right? But, you know, what I decided to do is I decided to get into it because what I saw within the financial advisor industry and the stockbroker industry is there was than many people that look like me at all. It's pretty much a very heavily male, like 40 to 50 year old white dominated industry. And I felt like stepping into that room, I had already, there was already a perception that maybe I wasn't smart enough or didn't have the capabilities to kind of accomplish some of the things that they accomplished. And I've been an athlete all my life. Mr. G can tell you, we used to compete against each other all the time at track and field. The one thing that as an athlete that you hate is being challenged. So anytime somebody puts something in front of you that you feel like, you know, they're putting out there because they're saying that you can't do it, or, you know, it's just a challenge, like that's something that we always want to, like, we want to knock down that wall. So for me, that became my driving force behind why I wanted to do this now. It became something where it's like, you know, not only am I going to do this, but I'm going to do this better than all of you, right? Just because I'm not supposed to be here, you know, based off of stereotypical things. So I passed my Series 7 on the first chance, passed 3, 4, 5 more licensing exams, became a fully licensed financial advisor. I started off working with a lot of small business owners and just everyday, you know, people with 9-to-5, that people that work really hard, people within, you know, city jobs, police officers, things like that. Then my career kind of moved into the medical field. I started working with a lot more like nurses and doctors. And then I got introduced to the music industry and the entertainment industry and athletes. So I work a lot now with music artists, people that are at executives at record labels. I work with a lot of professional athletes that play in the NBA and the NFL. And primarily my job has become even more important now because these are people that make a whole lot of money, right? Everybody knows that NBA players and the NFL athletes, they make a lot of money. But the big difference is they don't get to work their entire life to build out their retirement. A lot of them are getting the bulk of their income in, you know, 4 or 5 years of their career. And then they retire at age 28, 29. Now they got to figure out how to live the rest of their life on whatever money they made. And they made the bulk of their money in this small chunk of time. But what I will say is that the one advantage that I did have while speaking to these people is that, you know, a lot of these entertainers and athletes look like us as well. We pretty much dominate the entertainment space and professional sports. So when it came down to me having to introduce myself to these people, here's a lot of athletes and artists that, you know, look like me, they're around the same age as me, and now I have an advantage because now you just have to make sure you know what you're talking about, right? It's either me or you can go deal with somebody that looks nothing like you and might look like, you know, basically an older white guy. Like, let's just call it what it is, right? So who would you rather hang out with? Would you rather hang out with somebody that looks like you, that can help you with your finances, be there for you and help you out with stuff like that, or this person that you probably would never have around? So it became super important for me to make sure that I knew how to really understand finance and how to really give people proper guidance, because I realized how important my role was now at this point in guiding this generation to, you know, a different outcome than probably prior generations. I feel like when it comes to our people in general, one of the biggest things is that we have to learn how to stick together. We have to learn how to trust each other. But when it comes to trusting each other, we also have to make sure that we're all qualified and make sure that we know what we're talking about and make sure that we actually take the steps to make sure that we're giving out proper advice. So I take things like that extremely serious. I'm constantly educating myself every single day on different areas of finance, on different investment opportunities, things like that. So anybody out there that's listening to this right now that is considering, you know, what is the required, you know, like what are the requirements to become a financial advisor? You don't need to be super big on numbers. Some of the biggest skills that you have to learn how to obtain while becoming in the position is you have to really know how to network. You have to learn how to speak to people correctly. So you have to know how to articulate and, you know, be professional. You have to be real, because being real makes you trustworthy, and you have to be passionate about wanting to help people. If you can possess all of those traits and you put them together, it'll make for a very successful career, and you will build out your business, you know, very, very quickly. And people will want to see you win. One of the biggest things that I realize is that when you do the right thing by people, people want to do the right thing back by you. It's kind of like whatever you put out into the universe kind of comes back to you tenfold. I can personally say from my own experience that probably since 2016, I've been in finance for about 10 years now. So, but since 2016, I haven't made any outbound calls or reached out to any clients or anything like that. My entire business, my entire practice has been completely built off of word of mouth of referrals of other clients. So, you know, one music artist hears about me and hears I help this person manage their record deal. And that leads to them saying, hey, you need to really go talk to Q because Q is going to help you manage your money. And then he tells an athlete about it and then kind of so on and so forth. So the ball has kind of just rolled like that. As far as the money you can make in this industry also, because I know that's important to everybody. I mean, everybody wants, you know, you don't just get into the industry and I wouldn't know how much you make, right? So it really depends on the practice that you build over time and it depends on the type of clients that you work with. I can say that when I got into the industry, I was 22 years old and I'm 32 now. The first time that I had made over six figures, I was 24. So since then, I haven't made less money than that. So I can say that I feel very blessed for having the career that I have. But I can honestly account that to just continuously wanting to do the right thing by people, not being focused on the money or, you know, the accolades or things like that. You have to have a genuine concern for, you know, wanting to see people have success in their life. And that resonates with people. And when you get that from people, they give it back to you. And then everybody kind of wants to work together to kind of find a, you know, a common goal. So yeah, that's what I would say. So if anybody has any questions about that, I'll be happy to answer questions when that time comes. But thank you, Mr. G, for having me.
All right. Appreciate you, Kasim. Appreciate you, man. All right. Let's get into our next speaker. He's another native of Brooklyn. He is a doctor and the founder of Complete Health Ventures that aims to mentor and inspire future Black and Latino physicians. So let's welcome Mr. Kwezi Blackman.
Thanks for the introduction. A little bit about myself. I'm born in Georgetown, Guyana, but I was raised in Flatbush, Brooklyn, New York, same as Pierre. After high school, I always wanted to be a physician when I was growing up. But like Pierre said, you know, violence in our community was very high. We didn't have the role models that we needed, only so drug dealers, gangbangers and such. I didn't do so well in high school. I was getting into the wrong things, got left back. Luckily I graduated on time, but I didn't get accepted to any colleges. And then, you know, my dreams of becoming a doctor slowly faded away. I joined the United States Army September 11, 2001. That was my first day in the Army. Served 5 years in the Army, rose to the rank of sergeant at the age of 20. I did very well in the Army, but you know, I didn't love it. That was what I always wanted to do with my life. Now, as I looked around, and you know, when you look around also, you have to love what you do. And I got really into quotes when I was in the Army. And it was a quote by Confucius that said, choose a job you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. And that really resonated with me because I looked around, I seen other older senior sergeants hated life. Like they just got stuck in the Army and they couldn't get out. So when the time came, I decided to leave the Army and pursue my dream of going to becoming a physician. Now, to let you all know, I'm not a school enthusiast. I love school. I love going to school. I love learning new things. But if I could become a doctor with an associate degree or a high school diploma, I would do whatever you need to do to get what you need to love to do. Success doesn't mean being a doctor to me. Success means doing what I enjoy doing. Whether it had to be high school degree or a medical degree. That being said, after I got out of the Army, I went to Kingsbury Community College where I got my associate degree in biology, transferred to Northeastern University where I got my bachelor's degree in biology, did my medical degree at Howard University College of Medicine, and I did an MBA at Long Island University. And now I'm completing my medical training in internal medicine here in Brooklyn. I love what I do, and I believe that that's success to me. Not the degrees, not, you know, being called doctor. I love interacting with my patients. I love the feeling of being able to connect to my community. So I'm about to finish my medical training, and I got a job at one of the top medical hospitals here in New York, New York Presbyterian. I wanted to facilitate, because one of the problems I saw while working here in Brooklyn is a lot of doctors are not from our communities and they really don't care about us on a basic level, right? As a human level, and they can't connect with the patients like I was. So one way to alleviate this issue is to by creating more Black doctors. And we have to create more Black doctors by telling students, by telling you guys that you're able to do this. It's very, it's a long process that I could have had been shorter for me if I had the guidance that I needed. So I created a company, me and my partners created a company called Complete Health Interest, who we mentor and help facilitate the process, you know, give the guidance that I needed when I was growing up. And that's what I do. A normal day in my life is like I'm still in training. So I rotate through different medical hospitals. Internal medicine, there's something called outpatient and inpatient. Outpatient is when you go to the doctor, you go to the clinic and you see the doctor and, you know, you get a checkup, you do a physical exam and you get prescribed some medications or whatever. And then inpatient is the real difficult medicine. When a patient, like if you ever got admitted to the hospital and the doctor comes around on you every day and takes your blood and reads your labs, it's more intense than it's IC level care. A lot, because of the COVID pandemic right now that's going on, you have to deal with a lot of patients in the hospital that are dying from COVID. So that's another reason why I love my job, because I'm, like I said, I'm working in a hospital in my community that I grew up. So a lot of people that are coming in the hospital are patients that are dying from these disorders, COVID. One of my friends, his mother, baby mother's mother was in the hospital sick with COVID, and they couldn't go to her room because she was sick with COVID. But I was. When I found out she was in the hospital, you know, I put on my PPE, I went in there, I spoke with her. Luckily she improved. And she's been downgraded to medical floors and hope she'll be going home soon. So that kind of impact and influence I can have on my community. And hopefully one day, one of you guys would, you know, I'm not gonna be around forever. And my son, my and other people in my community need people like that, that you actually really care. And it's not just here for a paycheck. And I'm open to answering any of your questions you may have.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that, Kwesi, man. Appreciate having you, man. And definitely need more Black and Brown doctors, man, to hook us up. And, you know, we all know the studies in medicine and what happens when we get to hospitals and all that. But definitely need more Kwesis. All right. Our next speaker is a motivational speaker. He travels all across the country and outside of the country, motivating young students, middle school, high school, college, and beyond, about life and some of his, you know, his journey, his difficult experiences and how he overcame everything. And he just dropped his new podcast, so he'll share that information with you guys. So this is Mr. Hashim Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. G. I appreciate it. Thank you for the invite. So I am as you heard, I'm a motivational speaker, educational consultant. And what I do is I get a chance to talk with young people about different topics. And I've been in this line of work now for over 25 years. And so I've been self-employed since 2001. I'm originally from Brooklyn as well, born in Flatbush. So a lot of gentlemen I see, you know, raised out there. So I was born in Flatbush, Kings County, but then I was really raised in the Bushwick Bed-Stuy area. And when I was a teenager, unfortunately, I kind of got involved in the wrong crowd and was dealing with a lot of stuff at home. And, you know, I was one of those kids that on the outside, everybody thought everything was well, you know, the kid who dressed nice and wore the nice clothes. My mother's side of the family was from Jamaica. My father's side was from the South. So, you know, it was like the best, it was like the dichotomy of two different worlds, you know, because my mom's side was like, you know, they came here. And so they believed that education was the passport, you know, and my father's side was the same, but they more were like, you know, the blue collars. And so kind of growing up without my dad in the home, I was constantly looking for those father-like figures, those big brother-like figures. I was the only child. And so, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, being dark-skinned or being intelligent, there were a lot of things you got just picked on, you know, picked about. And so I would go to school and be, you know, teased about, oh, you know, you sound white or you're too articulate and all of this kind of stuff. And so I kind of learned at an early age that, you know, in my neighborhood, they don't respect intelligence, at least my peers didn't respect intelligence. What they really respected was how tough you were, you know, or if it wasn't how tough you were, it was like, you know, how if you can't play ball, then you better be tough. Or if you can't play ball and you ain't tough, then you know, you better have some other little skill. And so I wasn't an athlete. And but what I knew is I knew my books. But as I said, just growing up, I kind of figured out, okay, the intellect was only going to take me but so far amongst my peer group. And so, you know, I'm trying to fit in. And next thing you know, I get involved in the wrong crowd. I joined a gang when I was like sixth grade, had no idea what I was getting myself into. You know, and it was just a slow decline into just making a plethora of poor decisions. And so sixth, seventh, eighth grade, making all of these terrible decisions. And then my mother realized, you know, she was really concerned about what was going to happen to me. And so she had decided, you know, maybe we need to relocate. And so it was May of 1990. And my mom is, you know, saying maybe we should get out of Brooklyn. And I think it was like a Monday, if I'm not mistaken. And I was in this gang, and my so-called members, the so-called guys that was in my gang, they realized that I was going to get out. And, you know, one of the things I always tell young people, you know, getting in a gang is easy. Getting out of it is difficult. That's the hard part. And so as we were trying to leave that gang, these so-called guys knock on the door, ask me to come outside. And little did I know they wanted to, you know, set me up to get killed. And so I go outside with them. And unfortunately, I was shot multiple times that evening. One bullet struck me in the spine. The other bullets hit me in the legs. And as a result, I sustained a spinal cord injury. And so for the next 6 months, you know, it felt like it was hell on earth. You know, just being consumed with anger, being consumed with revenge, being consumed with, you know, depression, suicidal thoughts. Like 15 years old, one second I'm up walking and running around, and next second I can't move anything. So I was really just consumed with like, what am I going to do, and really wanting to retaliate. And it had gotten to such a bad place that I wanted to hurt the kid so bad that the detectives, when they caught the kid who shot me, you know, they said, listen, we caught him. All you need to do is press charges, and this kid is going to go to jail. I was 15, he was 16, and I chose to not say anything. I chose to kind of keep to that code of the streets, like, you know, I ain't going to snitch. Well, because I chose not to say anything, because I was concerned about what, you know, my nefarious or my gang members would think about me, the kid was released from jail about a week later. I find out that same kid who shot and paralyzed me, he was out home running around, gets into a shootout and shot and paralyzed somebody else that I knew. And I'll never forget, you know, hanging up that phone when I heard that he had shot and paralyzed somebody else, and just, you know, literally looking out the window of my hospital room, just saying like, what have I done? You know, because I had a chance, I had an opportunity to be a part of the solution. And I was too much of a coward in that moment to do it. And so I played a role in somebody else getting paralyzed. And it was at that moment that I was just like, yeah, you got to start making some really better. I had to really start making some wise and grown-up decisions. And so that was 15. From 15 to 18, I did like some homeschool. I had therapy, all of that kind of stuff. And then about 18, I went off to college. I went to Rutgers in New Brunswick. I wanted to study investment banking. And so while I'm at school, it was literally the first time I had really been around a whole bunch of other kids, other young people. And it was just overwhelming for me. And I remember they sent me home. Now, mind you, college was wonderful. It was fun, but I could not juggle the social life, schoolwork, and at the same time, just the reality, like, yo, I'm crippled and everybody else isn't, you know? And so I come home and I said, you know, Ma, they sent me home on academic probation and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with my life. And without missing a beat, I'll never forget, she's washing dishes. I'm 19 years old. She's washing dishes. And I'm like, Ma, what am I supposed to do with my life? And she goes, you need to go in your room, get on your knees and pray and ask God to show you what he wants you to do with your life. And I just was like, nah, I need, like, give me some insight. Tell me exactly what I should do with my life. And she was like, get in the room, wash, get on knees and ask. I was like, all right, close my door. And I'll never forget, it was March of 95. I get on my knees and I'm like, God, show me, what is it you want me to do? And no lie, the next day I get a phone call from this lady and she goes, is this Hashim Garrett? I go, yeah. She goes, I heard about you when you were in therapy, a year or so ago. Would you be interested in talking to kids about violence prevention, about what happened to you? I'm 19. I had been eating nothing but pizza for the last 2 and 3 months while I was in school. Every day, I got no money in my pocket, nothing but lint in my pocket. So my first question was, are you going to pay me? She's like, yeah, I'll give you $50 a day. I was like, I ain't got nothing. That'll work. So I went out to a school. It was in Newark, New Jersey. I was living in Jersey at the time. And it was like a light bulb went off for me. And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is it. And so I worked with that company for about 6 years. I got trained in this curriculum. It was developed by Harvard University, a Black woman who realized in the 80s that violence was a health epidemic in America. And everybody looked at this Black physician like, nah, they were saying to her, no, violence is a Black problem. Violence is an inner city problem in the 80s. And she was like, no, I'm telling you, it's a health epidemic. Just like we treat cancer, just like we treat HIV at the time, we have to get ahead of this gun violence. This is a problem in America. And they were like, no, it's a Black problem. And now here we are, 2020, and we can truly say, yeah, gun violence is a health problem. It's a problem. And so what I did was I was going out into the schools, you know, paired up with this curriculum and with my experiences. And I had to, you know, recruit other young people who were coming into this rehab facility, who were Black and brown, who were sustaining gunshot wounds. And I went out into the schools and I really started to teach students what causes all of this gun violence. And it was amazing because I found when I would go into schools and I would ask kids, well, you know, how does somebody get HIV and AIDS? Kids all over the school could say, oh yeah, Mr. Guy, this, you know, it's unprotected sex and it's sharing needles. I was like, excellent. Well, how do you think people get cancer? Well, sometimes it's, you know, carcinogens and smoking cigarettes. All right, perfect. Well, let me ask you, what do you think causes all of the homicides? And it was like crickets. And then they throw out all of these different answers. I was like, nah, the research shows these are the top three causes. And it was, and it still is, it's arguments, alcohol and other drugs, and weapons. And so we began to have conversation that I'm going to teach them about this. And ultimately at the core is like, yo, what happened to me? I don't want it to happen to you. But bigger than what happened to me, it's the fact that homicide is the number one cause of death for young Black males. And that's an issue. So if we know that homicide is an issue, we have to teach it and make sure that they understand that either one, we don't want them to be perpetrators, and two, we don't want them to become victims. And we also, at that same time, we have conversations about the prison industrial complex and the pipeline, that they can look at your fourth grade reading levels and your math levels and determine how many new jails to build. And so as I began having these conversations with students and we start talking about gangs and we're talking about, you know, all of these different components, that company that I was working for in 2001, they said, we don't want to continue doing this. But I was like, this is my passion. I love it. And he was like, well, if it's your passion, keep doing it. And I was like, all right. And so again, I just was like, God, what do you want me to do? It's 2001 now. And I reached out to some schools and said, listen, before you were paying this other organization and before this other organization would come and then I would do the work, now I need you to start paying me. And they would say, okay. And next thing you know, I started getting contracts. I'm getting contracts with this school district and that school district. And now, you know, it was like one person trying to be everywhere. And in the process of doing that, then I started working with other nonprofits. And before that, next thing you know, I'm traveling all over the world. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this thing then blew up. I just was happy with $50 before. Now this thing is taking on a whole nother life. And I met these white people. They were like Amish. And they said, this was back in the days, there used to be the show on Channel 7 called Like It Is with Gil Noble, may his soul rest in peace. And so he had me on his show one day. And I said, just in passing in an interview, I was like, yeah, I forgave the kid who shot me. And I never thought about it. And so these white Amish people who are multi-millionaires, they said, would you be interested in coming out and talking to school students about how you forgave the kid who shot you? I was like, yeah, I think I could give it a shot. But once I started talking with students about forgiveness, and I've been sharing that message with them now for the last 10, 15 years, it has been not only therapeutic for myself, but also it's allowed me to have a whole nother side conversation with students outside of just gun violence. It's really about understanding you have to learn how to forgive in order to move on from trauma, because a lot of young people are going to schools and what is normal for them is not normal for another community. For an example, it is not normal for a kid to lay in his bed and know the sounds of what a 9mm sounds like and a 350 sounds, 357 sounds like. That shouldn't be normal. You know, it is not normal for a young kid to come to school and know that his best friend was just murdered, or he's walking to school and kids in the school got rest in peace shirts on because their peers are getting killed. That's, but we normalize it. And, you know, so students come to school and there's no moment of silence. There's no grief counselors for every time Raheem and such get killed. But if there's a mass shooting, then they have vigils outside of suburban schools. But every single day that our young boys and girls get killed is just like sweep it under the rug. And I need you to turn to page 47. Or your father was just killed. Don't worry. Just sweep it under the rug, sweep it under the rug. And, you know, it's okay for our young girls to cry. It's okay for our young girls to say, you know, they need a moment. But for our boys, they grow up with this toxic masculinity where they just have to, they've been told they, the only emotion that boys should feel is anger. They're not supposed to be sad. They're not supposed to be worried. They're not supposed to be scared. They're not supposed to be depressed. They can only feel anger. That's okay to express. And so we start having real conversations about, no, we got to talk. And, you know, smoking and drinking can't be our only coping mechanism, you know, or beating up somebody and taking it out on other people. So, like I said, you know, this is just really my passion. I love doing this, constantly getting out in front of talking with young people. So being on a platform like this and seeing so many of my brothers out here doing wonderful things, this is the motivation, because as I look at you, I'm just thinking to myself, come Monday, I know I'm talking to young dudes who will be like you, you know? And so it's just to remind them. And that's part of what I also do is I'm always partnering. So as I'm looking at Dr. Blackman, it makes me think about all of the work that I did with the three doctors here in New Jersey. You know, some of you may be familiar with the three doctors, and they wrote a few books. They've been on Oprah about how they made this pact and they decided together that they were going to become doctors. And so I've worked with Dr. Samson Davis. He's always on Dr. Oz now lately. But we went out into the schools and there were nothing but young Black doctors who were just showing kids like, look, we did it, you could do it. And then I was working with them and they would start, you know, explaining to kids about emergency laparotomies. And I would talk to the students and tell them, yeah, you see this long scar on my stomach? This is when the surgeons had to cut me open and remove, you know, they removed an exploratory procedure in my abdominal cavity. I mean, I'm learning stuff like, dad, doc, this is what they did to me. And like, I'm sharing it with kids and they just like, you know, and so we had this, you know, real deep conversations. So I'm always about collaborating. And so even as I look at, you know, Brother Pierre and the work that you're doing, I'm constantly telling students, you know, get your CDL, because if you have your license for 1 year, then you can get your CDL. Like I'm always doing research on how they can improve themselves. So, you know, just talking to you guys are encouraging me. I'm like, man, I can't wait the Monday. You know, I got to get back out there. So I appreciate it. You know, yes, you guys sir. Definitely encourage me, man.
Appreciate you, man. Powerful, powerful story, man. And there's so much more to it, man, that we will definitely cover on Mastermind. But before we tackle questions, can you share with us your new podcast, man? What the name of it is?
Yeah. Listen, let me give a big shout out to one of my mentors, Doc. You know, I was on his show a few weeks ago and I was like, thinking about the podcast, and so he really, you know, got my curiosity. So if you guys go on Spotify, just uploaded, I guess you call it, on, it's called HMG. So it's my initials, Hashim Ming Garrett, HMG. And so I'm just trying to put out daily doses of good vibes, man, especially for young people, but also for us adults. So I'm, you know, married, separated with two kids. So, you know, listen, it's, we all need it, you know. So HMG.
Yes, sir. I'll have it in the chat in a little bit. HMG, dope information. And if y'all like what y'all heard from Mr. Garrett, man, you're gonna love the podcast. All right, we are up to that time. Questions. You can ask questions in the chat if you don't want to say anything. If you do want to say something, you can go to the reaction section and raise your hand and you can address your questions to any of the individuals, or you can address it to everybody and everybody can respond. So we will take questions now. So you could raise your hand or you could type in the chat and I will read your questions. All right, we got first question.
How y'all doing? So my question was, right,
I was thinking about this, you know, also I have a very entrepreneur mindset as well. And obviously, you know, being melanated myself, you know, there are things within being Black that people or boys slash men have to deal with. My question is, at what point does a boy become a man? And y'all, like, and y'all humble opinion, at what point does a boy cross into manhood?
That's for everybody?
Yeah, anybody can answer it.
All right. Who wants to tackle that?
Go ahead, Pierre.
Yeah, I'll tap into that one myself. And just off of personal experience, I think life does not provide any binoculars that where we can look into certain things to say, okay, you know what, I'll be a man in this day or this hour, or I'll be successful this day or this hour. There is no such manual book that come with life. But I think one way you can really start realizing that, you know, when you start thinking from a little boy to a man, and is when you start removing yourself out of the equation, when you're no longer thinking just by yourself, when you're no longer thinking just about you, and you start thinking about how your action can affect others, that's when you start actually getting in the journey of becoming a man, right? And the reality is, it takes a lot of us to hit maturity. As my brother Hasim was saying, you know, growing up in certain communities, you know, we don't have access to certain information. So all we have is us, and all we see is the same thing that we see around us every day, good or bad. But that's a great question that you asked there. But one way for you to understand when you start making that change from a little boy to a man is when you start realizing that it's not about you. Everything that you do have a repercussion that come beyond it. And you have to be mindful of how those decisions will affect others that come after you, whether it's your community, whether it's your mom, your sibling, or the brothers and sisters that you hang out with. The minute you start realizing that your actions is very important and there's other people that's looking after you, that's when I believe you start making the transition from a little boy to a man.
Right. Thank you for that, Pierre. If anybody else want to answer that?
Definitely. Definitely. To piggyback off of what Pierre said, I completely agree. I believe the time I became a man was when I was in the Army. When I became a sergeant, I had the responsibility of other people's lives. When you stop thinking about yourself and start thinking about other people before you, that's when you really become a man. That's when you really have to make tough decisions about how you're living your life, the example that you're setting. And it's a difficult, a lot of pressure on you. It's a tough load to carry. And like I said, that's when I believe that's the time I became a man.
All right. Got a typed question here, unless anybody else wanted to answer.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, the only thing I would just throw in there as well is accountability. I find for myself, when I really just start holding myself accountable for the decisions and I'm not blaming everybody else, you know? So I think to me that's a key component as well to add on to what both of them just said, my brother said.
Appreciate that, guys. All right, next question.
I'll add one more thing.
Okay, Kasim. Yeah, Kasim.
And I also just want to throw in, like, I 100% agree with what all they're saying, but I also want to add that it is a gradual process as well. I don't believe that it's something that you, like, snap into in one day. You will definitely become a man in certain areas before others. You know what I mean? So it's like, don't think that one day you have to wake up and you have to have it all figured out. Like, you will gradually evolve. Like, I know personally myself, you know, I'm not 100% there in all areas yet, but that's okay because it'll gradually happen. I learn more and more every day how to, you know, become that person I need to be.
I agree with that.
Just add on to that because he is so right.
That's
I think being open-minded and being open to learning and learning from your mistakes. And one thing I would say is understanding is there's a big difference with mistakes and conscious decisions. And I think once you start understanding those things, it kind of really puts you in a better path to start making better decisions moving forward. And what I mean by that is when you make a mistake, right, we all saw some mistake, you know, that opens up the door for you to do it again, right? Because we really didn't learn from it. Now, when you look at it and say, no, I've made a conscious decision, however, the end result, I wasn't happy with it, or I don't want the end result, then you start being a little bit more mindful. So, but don't mix those two, mistakes and, you know, conscious decision, because they're totally different. So all of that is part of that journey of you becoming the next best version of yourself.
Appreciate that, guys. Appreciate that one. Next question here is to everyone. If you had the chance to go back to the past, what would you tell your younger self? It's a good question.
Buy Apple.
Apple and Google and Amazon.
Oh, that's a good one. I'll take on that one. What I would definitely tell myself is, you know, do not let the worries of this world dictate who you are. The world is a, how can I put it, is a very unfair place. And one thing I've learned is that, you know, all the people that we look up to ourselves, you know, sometimes they don't know jack themselves. So don't be, I wouldn't be hard on myself. If I was able, if I could really, really go back in that time, is I would have a little bit more compassion with myself. I'll be a little bit more understanding with myself. I would love to show a little bit more love to my friends and family when I was growing up, as my brother alluded to earlier, is we grow up with this mentality, with this mindset that we have to be tough all the time, right? It's always tough love. So for me, yeah, I'll say that I probably hug, you know, especially the brothers that I've lost, you know, from the street, you know, or whether incarcerated, I think I would, you know, hug them a lot more and tell them that I love them a lot more and tell them that, you know, I see greatness in them, tell them that they are great. And probably, I think it would probably have a different impact in my community. That's definitely for sure one thing I would have loved to change.
I just want to jump right on to what Pierre said is, I definitely would keep in mind this too shall pass. So knowing that, you know, nothing lasts forever, I would take those moments to tell people that I love them more, you know, and realize on the flip side, when something bad that you're going through, it does not last forever, you know? And so sometimes you kind of get overwhelmed and just feel like this is what it's always going to be. And you got to make sure you not listening to those voices that make you feel like this is the end of the world. And the second part is so it's three parts. One, this too shall pass. Number two is you are not alone. You know, there are people who really, really care about you, who want to see you do well. And then the last one is you have to ask for help, you know, because a closed mouth can't get fed. People can't read my thoughts. They don't know when I'm hurting. They don't know when I'm scared. They don't know. And so so when they say, are you okay? And you act like you're good. And you're like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. Nah, you have to say, you know what? Nah, I'm not good. Yeah, this is what I'm kind of concerned about. And then those people that come into your life, they can pour into you and say, all right, this is how you need to do X, Y, and Z. But they'll never know what kind of things you were wrestling with unless you say something. So you are not alone. This too shall pass. So, you know, smile when you can and understand when it's going through something, you're going through something rough. It'll get better, you know? And so those three things.
What I would tell my younger self is to not be afraid to take on new opportunities. I think a lot growing up, you kind of try to stay within the mold of what everybody else is doing because you kind of want to fit in. And a lot of times that kind of closes your exposure to other things off. You don't realize how much more of the world there is. You know what I mean? So what you experience within your small circle, there's so much more. So I would try to step out of my comfort zone a lot more back then because I would have had a lot more exposure to different things. Even just ending up in the lane that I ended up in was completely an accident. But if I would have probably stepped out of my circle earlier on, there's probably 9 million examples like that probably could have been further if I would have taken this type of step intentionally. And that goes like perfectly into my next point. I would say I would have also told myself to live a lot more intentionally. And I guess what that means is that every single day and everything that you do, you should have an intention behind it and have an understanding behind why you're doing it. Don't let too many days slip by where it's just you just living. Like, always try to progress. If you're going to have a conversation with somebody, try to gain something from it. If you're going to go someplace to hang out, try to you know, gain an experience from that. Like, try to do things that have intention, because when you do things that have intention, it progresses your life and it gives you exposure. And then from there, you know, you have a lot more to work with moving forward. You have a lot more experience.
Appreciate that, guys. Appreciate that. All right. This one is to the business folks. So when is the best time to start your own business?
Yesterday.
that's the best answer right there, for real. For me, I would say, yeah, the best time to start a business is through chaos, right? And a lot of times, you know, whenever there's chaos, a lot of people run from chaos. And me, I see it differently. I always say wherever there's chaos, there's an opportunity to cash in. So currently right now, just look at our world. We live in a chaotic world, right? So that means if you kind of can quiet the noise, right, and pay attention to your surrounding, there's so many opportunities out there to start businesses, right? For example, let's look at e-commerce, right? People want stuff overnight, right? I understand some businesses you need some large capital to start, but as a matter of fact, I don't even want to say business you need large capital to start, because I'm pretty sure everybody on this call here got at least 3 pairs of Jordans, right? So again, so that's just to show you that I don't want to say that money is the lacking of us starting businesses, but I think is group economics is that we don't really understand yet. So I think the best way to start a business right now, if you look at, you know, look at what your friend consume all the time, your peers, what is it that they're into, right? Or what is a problem that you see in your specific community, whether it's in your class, whether it's in, you know, in the school period, whether it's in the park that you go and play basketball game, whether it's the church that you go to with your family. Be a solution person, right? And that's the best way to start a business. Too often I hear people say they want to go in business because they want to make money, right? And that is far from the truth. You don't want to go in business to make money. You want to go in business to solve a problem, to bring a solution. So if you can quiet the noise, look at your surrounding, look at your peers, pay attention to what people are consuming. I can promise you, man, by tonight, you'll probably have 10 different business ideas on what it is that you can sell to your friend. What is it that you can sell to your community? So I think, again, is pay attention to where the chaos is at. Wherever there's chaos, there's an opportunity catching. But as young, you know, teenagers, young men and sisters on this line, just again, just look at the things that, you know, your peers are consuming. Look at the things that they're into. So I think that will give you an idea of exactly what type of business to start.
Yeah. And I guess to add to my statement of yesterday, right? I think another important thing about getting into business is it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to fail. Your first business is not going to be a multi-billion dollar business. You know what I mean? So I would set expectations for the goals that you have. Be realistic. When you get into a business, kind of set milestones for yourself. If you're not hitting those milestones, you have to pivot. Don't get trapped in, you know, selling everything that you have or over-investing yourself into something that may not be working out. It's okay to rewind, restart, revamp, and do the whole thing over again, especially at your age. I would try to get as many businesses, you know, started as possible right now because it's going to add to your experience. By the time you're, you know, out of college or, you know, 20s, 30s, whatever age, you know what I mean? You would have probably started 4, 5, 6 businesses by then. So your 7th business will be way better than your first one. So get as much experience as possible. Don't delay the process. In business, there is no book. There is no course. There is no like nothing that's going to outweigh experience. Like you have to do it. That's the only way to really understand how business is going to be successful for you.
Yes, for sure. No, that's definitely a clean one for all the young entrepreneurs. I think you guys are asking some great questions. Business really don't come with a manual book, right? And I think one of the major reasons that you see that our community are lacking entrepreneurship is the fear of being ridiculed and the fear of failure, right? And a lot of times that stops us from actually executing on anything. And I'm here to tell you, do not let your community, let your peers or anyone fear you into starting a business because you're going to fail, right? As the young brother here again, Haseem, I empathize with your situation, man. Just him saying, hey, look, what if I would have made a decision, you know, to say something, I could have prevented another brother, you know, getting hurt. So it's the same way you have to look at it. The fact that you're not starting that business today, the fact that you're not being innovative today, just look at the endless opportunities that you're leaving on the table. And tomorrow is not promised. So I would say hurry up and fail, grab life by the horn. And, you know, again, use that as your stepping stone, and don't let none of those obstacles become your stepping stone. And we as minorities, the communities that we're from, we are the most equipped, qualified individual to build businesses, because if you just look at where we live at every day, getting up and going to the corner store is a risk. Hanging out with the wrong crowd is a risk. Not going to school is a risk, right? You know, just being Black alone is a risk of getting killed. So just if you look at all of that, and businesses is nothing but taking risk. So if we take those risks with our personal life every day on where we live or who we hang out with, on the things that we do, why not take a risk where you can solve a problem and be a multi-billionaire and you can actually change the community? So I would definitely say take risk.
Dope answers, guys. Appreciate that. All right. This one is for everyone. What or who inspired you to be where you're at today?
The hood. For me, it was definitely the hood and the fear of being mediocre. Because one thing, and I think I believe Kasim said it right, the world don't revolve around, you know, our communities. There's much more outside of our community than the world, you know, the world has to offer. One thing that did it for me is after I graduated high school, my uncle took me on a cruise, right? It was a 9-day cruise. And that cruise changed my entire perception around the world because I thought the world revolved around Flatbush. That's all I knew. But once they took me out of that community and just go on a vacation and see what the world looked like, man, my mind just started, you know, just going all over the place and say, how can I live this lifestyle every day? So, yeah, so my inspiration was the fact that I lived in the hood and I know what it is like to live outside of the hood. So that became my biggest reason to kind of keep pushing myself again, because the fear of becoming a statistic, sometimes good fears are good, and the fear of being a mediocre. So those are the things that inspired me to keep pushing. Although I know you guys have millions of dollars and all of that, trust me, I've been through hell and back, and it's not getting any easier. I'm still going through it. I'm building the business. We're building a community. So I'm getting my butt kicked every day. But the fact that, again, the fear of being a statistic, the fear of going back to that community, the statistic that we've seen every day with my brothers and sisters, those are the things that I'm passionate about. And that's what inspires me to keep going every day. So find a mission that you're really, really passionate about. Find something that you really feel like you can do for free. Even if they wasn't paying you a dime to do it, you will still get up and do it. And I think that is going to be your inspiration to change the world and be the greatest leaders you all can be.
I'll just jump in real quick. I would have to say, for me growing up, some of my biggest role models have been people that I read about that I never met, you know, the Frederick Douglasses, the Booker T. Washingtons, the Malcolms, the Martins, all of those kind of people really inspired me to see, you know, that there was greatness that existed before I came along. And so, but then in my own lives, it has been just a lot of different people, whether it was my mother, you know, whether it was my pops that I would see, you know, but the people that I've been blessed to meet along the way have just continued to inspire me, and they taught me things. So, you know, like I said, I didn't grow up with a father in the house. So I was able to see fathers and mimic what they did and say, okay, this is, you know, this is what you got to do. Like when you talk to a kid, you have to get down to, you know, when you stand up, talk to a child, you should never tower over a kid. You should get down to their level. And so they just made me understand it's the little things that really count in this world. And so for me, my passion has always just been kind of like what Brother Pierre was just saying. It's been the hood. The hood taught me a lot, but I know that there's so much greatness in the hood. You know, I know that there are future doctors and lawyers and engineers and CEOs. I know the greatness that we have. And, you know, never let anybody tell you that we are a minority, because the reality is there are more people of color in this world than there are people who don't have color. We are the majority. You know, I've had a chance to travel to Africa, and we are the majority. It is the biggest continent in the world, you know? And so the terminology is always important, man. We are the majority, you know? And so when you do business, realize in this day and age, you know, when you have like a digital platform, like I have my daughter, she'll be 13 soon, and she's got a bracelet company, and she wants it on Etsy, and she was just selling her bracelets at school. She's in the 7th grade, and she's creating a digital calendar because she realizes she doesn't have to worry about inventory. You know what I mean? So she's trying to create a digital space. So, you know, you're never too young, man, but mentors and people who inspire you are everywhere. The bus driver can inspire you. Everybody can inspire you, you know, but you have to glean it from so many people. So I'll leave you with this quote real quick. And it says in 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the way you see the problem can be the problem. So find the greatness in people, you know, and let them all motivate you, you know? So that's what I want to throw in.
You know, for me, a TV show actually inspired me to become a doctor. But what keeps me going, keeps me, you know, motivated to do what I do is my patients, you know, speaking to patients, you know, seeing them get better, leaving the hospital, that motivates me. Being able to interact with them, ask the questions that they have answers, give them answers that they have questions to. That's what motivates me. And that's what makes me happy.
For myself, I would have to say my family. I'm the oldest of 3 children. So all my life, I felt like I've had to be a leader for my siblings. And I take that very serious. You know what I mean? Like, I think that growing up being the oldest kind of makes you want to make sure that the rest of your family will always be good. So even in times where I'm kind of struggling or things are hard for me, I've always felt that I've had to figure out a way to push through to show that, you know, show my siblings that, hey, you know, even when things are bad, you can figure it out. And then in regards to like my parents have, you know, done everything to put me where I am right now. So for me, it's making them proud is something that's also very important to me. So my biggest motivation, my inspiration, and why I keep doing the things that I do is literally like my family, to make sure that my family is good. And I also know that there's going to become a point in time where, you know, everybody's parents get older and it's going to become your responsibility to take care of them. If you don't put yourself in a position where you're good, you can't take care of nobody else. So I think about the future a lot in regards to, you know, what I'm going to be able to give back and how I'm going to be able to help. And I know that I have to do what I have to do now to be able to help them. So that's my emphasis for that.
Appreciate that, guys. There was a question, I think it was similar to the last question we had. It was asking about, as a young person, what advice would you have for young people that want to start businesses? I think you guys kind of covered that. Next one is, how is it working for yourself in a job setting? Self-employed folks.
I know currently I'm an entrepreneur, but I still work for the people. So I'm glad for this question here, because too often, especially people in our community, they hear entrepreneurship, they hear businesses because they say, oh, I don't want to work for nobody else. I want to go in business by myself. Well, I'm here. Let me tell you, you are the worst person that you can work for. When you work for yourself, you technically really don't have a time off, right? Because again, there's still something that needs to be done at 7 p.m. There's always something that needs to be done at 8 p.m., 9 p.m., 10 p.m. And you as a business owner, it is your duty to keep the business running. It is your duty to do the right thing, especially when no one is watching. So people got this idea that entrepreneurship is not working for nobody. And I'm here to tell you that's a lie. There is nothing wrong with being an employee. And the thing about it is, being an employee, you have the opportunity to learn how to, one, treat people, or two, how to not treat people. Because again, an employee-employment relationship, you're going to learn a lot of things about your employer that you don't like. And that employer is also going to learn a lot of things about you that they may not like. But this is also an opportunity for you to understand the power of working with people, the power of demonstrating empathy, being able to understand others. And I think, again, a great leader or a great employer or a great entrepreneur always come from someone himself that was an employee. So when you're an employee at a place, don't just look at it that you just work there, your life is just being over, or you don't have no passion, no ambition. Just look at that experience as your learning curve. This is might be where, you know, your next idea may come. You know, you might be working into the shipping department. You might be working into the billing department. You might be working in HR, whatever it is that you're working in, you know, pay attention to those challenges in that company. And this is an opportunity for you to learn. So don't put into your mind that you're going to become an entrepreneur because you don't want to work for nobody. And you're just going to be a millionaire and just kind of live the best life you want. That's nothing but BS. It's going to require hard work. It's going to require dedication. It's going to require empathy. It's going to require trust. It's going to require everything in your body, everything in your soul to be entrepreneur. So please start as an employee, get to understand business, get to understand morale, just get to understand how things operate on an organizational level. So when you're doing your own thing yourself, at least you already have that experience. So that's one thing I would definitely say for sure. But you are always an employee of the people. I don't care how much buildings you own. I don't care how many restaurants you have. I don't care how many hospitals you have. The people that are pouring their money into your business are human beings just like you. And they believe in your service. They believe in who you are. So at the end of the day, you are an employee of them. You work for them. So always be that value to the people that you serve.
Yeah, you dropped the mic on that one, brother. That's facts right there. Yeah, that's a fact right there, man. You know, I hear a lot of young people that say, y'all don't want to work for nobody. And they usually kind of say it in this kind of tone. Where you go, yeah, you already on the wrong track here, man. You know, because it's really about working with the people, for the people. Yeah, you dropped the mic right there. That was it. You gotta play that one back 2-3 times. That was it.
No, thank you, Pierre. All right, next one here. You want to go, Kasim?
I'll just add to it, because the question is basically like, how is working for yourself in a job setting, right? It's scary. Like, that's the reality is that it's scary. It's not a comforting feeling to know that you could work many, many hours and make no money. Like, that's the difference between being an employee and an entrepreneur. Employees get to go into work every day and they get paid for the hours that they put in. As soon as you're an entrepreneur, you could put in 3 months worth of work and make no money, right? So it's definitely an uphill battle. But when you do get to a point where, you know, you figure it out and you've done, you know, it's like what both of them just said just now. It's, you have to cater to the people. When you understand that your business should revolve around helping people or solving a problem, then you'll get to the aspect of, you know, being a business owner, entrepreneur. That fun part will come sooner. But if you're just in it just because you don't want to have a boss, like, you're going to be broke for a long time.
Yeah. No, sure. Some Kasim, it's Kasim, correct? Because Kasim said earlier in his introduction, it's really about being sociable. You know, you have to know how to communicate with people. You have to know how to, you know, be gregarious, be sociable with people. That is like a core of whatever product you're pushing. Because one of the things I've found is that, you know, people are not necessarily buying your product. They're not investing in your product. They're investing in you. You know, 100%. And so if you come across arrogant, or if you come across with this terrible, personality, they're not going to want to support you. You know, so we're here today. Why? Because we got a lot of love for Pascal, right? So this is his platform. This is his business. We all dialed in because we got love for him. You know, so we support him, and that's how life is, man. You know,
absolutely. Yep. One last thing I would like to add to the people that's thinking about entrepreneurship, I think this is great. There's nothing wrong with that. I think we do need more entrepreneurs. But one thing I will tell you is that you do come last, right? You come last. While everybody else get paid, just like Kasim said, you're going to be the last person to get paid if you get anything left. So again, entrepreneur business owners is not somebody that just make money and just say, I own my own business. The reality is those are the people that know how to put other people first. And until you know how to do that, you're not ready for entrepreneurship.
Appreciate that, guys. Appreciate that. All right. Next one here is, what is a key thing to know when starting your own career and something to keep in mind while growing in the world that we're living in right now?
I think that's a good question for Kwesi right here. You're going to have to take that one.
Like I said in my intro, do what you love. You know, when you choose a career, do what makes you happy. Don't go for prestige. Don't go for, you know, titles and letters behind your names or all that stuff. Go for what you love, regardless of however long it takes or, you know, how difficult it is. You have to do what you love. So when you wake up in the morning, when I was in the military, I had this saying, I judge life based on how I feel when I wake up in the morning, I put on my boots. When I was in the army, I used to wake up in Iraq and say, oh man, I gotta go do this SHIT. And I hated my job, you know. But when I was in medical school and I had to wake up at 5 a.m. to go to the OR and I had to put on my scrubs. And even though it was early in the morning, I used to have a joy jumping out of bed, going to do what I had to do. Find what brings you that joy waking up in the morning or whenever you have to go get dressed or do whatever to go out to do it. Once you find that joy in life and that purpose, hold on to it, regardless of whatever it does. One of my patients just now told me that she's looking for a job as a cleaner. She said that's what makes her happy. She loves to go in a location that's dirty and clean it up. And she said that was what brings her joy. Right now she's working as a home health aide. So I gave her instructions how to go to our hospital facilities to see if she can get a job as a cleaner. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as you love your job and you love what you do. And like the other guys say, if you perform a service to someone else, you know, bring other people joy. You know, that speaks, that's the best thing you can do for your career.
Thank you for that, Kwesi. Next one here is to folks without a college degree. So how do you achieve things without a college degree?
That's where the hustle comes in. One thing for sure, I would say first, there's nothing wrong with a college degree. It's actually good to have one. But two, a college degree does not make you or it does not break you. A college degree does not dictate who you are as an individual. So it's a good to have too, but it's not the end of it all if you don't have a college degree. Now, again, one thing that I've learned from entrepreneurship and not having a college degree first was the hunger to keep educating myself outside of the norm of what colleges is teaching you. Colleges are, in a sense, sometimes, you know, they prepare you to be a great employee. They prepare you to be a great servant. But a lot of time they don't teach you about entrepreneurship. So for me is educating yourself a lot. There's one book that I will suggest that everybody on here read. It's called What the CEO Wants You to Know. And that for me was what turned the light bulb on. Once I realized, or once I've heard the word volume and profit margin, that really stuck to me, right? And one thing I didn't tell you guys about my story, when I was running my other business, I got into a car accident and I lost it. I started cleaning windows in Brooklyn, right? It was embarrassing. I was ashamed of it. I didn't want people to see me because they thought I was a crackhead. They thought I was a drug addict. But I hit rock bottom and had nothing else to do. And I said, no, I'm not going to go back to the street life that I knew. I said, I had to figure something out. So I started cleaning windows. And I started cleaning windows just simply because I read a book called What the CEO Wants You to Know. And my takeaway was, there's no different with the guy that's standing on the corner selling apples and oranges and bananas with Walmart. There's no difference. The only difference is one is operating at scale and the other one is doing it as a small business. Once I understood that concept, that's when I realized, okay, well, I don't need to have a college degree to be an entrepreneur. Now, however, my dream was to become a neurologist, which I know I can just read a book and be a neurologist, right? I do have to go to school for that. But definitely for entrepreneurship, once I understood consumer behavior, once I understood market fluctuation, pretty much, you know, how our world is moving and what it is that people are willing to pay for. And once I realized again that we live in a service world and people would pay top dollars for the right services. And that's when I really started applying myself. So if you're not, you know, if college is not for you, I don't want you to make you feel like, oh no, you're nobody. You can actually be great. One of the greatest, some of the best leaders that we have in our world today did not go to college. They did not complete college. So I think college, again, it prepare you for the world to be a servant. There's absolutely pros and cons on that. But if college is not for you, I definitely would say, you know, the self-educating, the self-development, all of those things is going to be key, because this is where you're going to start realizing that, okay, well, Coca-Cola sold, you know, 3 bottles in their first 3 years. And look at Coca-Cola now, right? What if they were to give up in that first year when they launched? So you start understanding that, you know, discipline, attitude, mentality, all those things is what will propel you to the next level. So whether you did it while you're in college or you did it while you were selling a bottle of water in that hood, either way is the same process, is the same journey. You just have to really kind of hold on to it. You just have to believe it. And you have to see yourself being successful way before you get to become successful. And that's one of the things that we do all the time. We only see ourselves based on the circumstances that we are around. We cannot see ourselves past that. So for me, although I was cleaning windows, I was always seeing myself where I am today as a CEO of a multi-million dollar company. So wherever you are right now, whatever challenge you are facing right now, whatever business idea you have right now, it may not be that $1 million business. It may not be that $10 billion business. But however, you need to see yourself way before you become that person that you intend to be.
Appreciate that, Pierre. Let's throw it in there too, man. How much you make cleaning windows, man?
Man, I did $62,000 cleaning windows in 3 months. And, you know, literally, I didn't have a dime. I didn't have a dollar. Read the book and I said, you know, I'm just going to swallow my pride and just go ahead. So I thought at first, I said, let me start selling buttons and zippers. I wasn't that creative. I couldn't find buttons and zippers. And walking everywhere in New York, you know, you got the barbershop, the beauty salon, the restaurants, the bars, all of these places, even cars passing by. I said, well, if I could get 100 restaurants pay me $10 per windows, I said, I could make $1,000 a week, right? So again, volume and profit margin. Before you know it, I went home, borrowed $70 from my little sister, went to Home Depot, got me some rags, got me some bucket, got me some scringy, and I also recruited 2 of my best friends, right? And said, hey, look, man, we're going to turn this into a multi-billion dollar business. And they believed in me. They also, you know, they was ashamed of doing it themselves. But once we started it, man, we started with this lime green shirt. And they was like, why do we have to put on this bright shirt? I said, well, look, if you look on Nostrand Avenue, there's nothing but stores next to each other or across the street from each other. I said, as we clean in one, somebody from across the street going to see this is going to look like a franchise. And they're going to come and ask us, can we clean their windows next? And that's exactly what we did. And like I said, in 3 months, we had all the Metro PCS stores in Brooklyn, all the 7-Elevens in Brooklyn, all the T-Mobile stores, some bank dental offices. And we started giving jobs to other young brothers in the community, cleaning windows. I pretty much created a whole window cleaning route. And again, made $62,000 with that money. I left the business with them to go back into trucking. Trucking was calling me. Took that money, then built a staffing agency to $2.5 million in revenue, then built a trucking to $1.7 million, and then got hit in the head. Everything hit rock bottom and came out the hospital and Bill Fleeing.
It is. Kasim, you want to add to that?
I would just say I wouldn't focus on college degree that much as far as, you know, how you achieve things. Personally, even in my own industry, like, I don't have a college degree in finance. Like I said, I was going to school for computer science and I ended up in a completely different industry. Most people that I know, they go to college and get degrees, they end up in some different industry anyway. What I would say is more important is building your network. So if you are going to go to college, the secret that I feel that makes the most sense is you should want to do as good as you could possibly do in high school. Get the best grades you could possibly get so that you can go to a really good college. But the reason why you're going to that really good college is because the people that you'll surround yourself with will be just as educated as you. So when you do have your multi-million dollar idea, your multi-billion dollar idea, your roommate or your classmates will also be geniuses like you. So it's important to be as smart as possible, get the best grades you can, go to the best school that you can go to, but it's not really because you want that degree. That degree is just a piece of paper. If you have the best degree in the world and then you don't have the network to get that job, you just have a degree. But if you are surrounding yourself with a bunch of people that are also just as smart as you, when you have that idea, it'll come full circle. And the best example that I can give is, like, if you start a business and you need to create a website, if you never went to college, who do you go to build your website for you? Your next door neighbor, the person that was across the street, the person you play basketball with. These are all people that may have no idea how to do this, right? But let's say you did as good as you could possibly do. You went to a really good school. Now you could probably stand outside a computer science room, watch somebody walk in, make friends with that person, and that person will be a genius at making websites. So it'll just offer you a lot more access to people that can help to scale your business a lot faster. You would rather have a network filled with geniuses and people that are experts in their field than to have to go with a bunch of people that have watched a few YouTube videos on it. Now we're all going to try to figure it out together, right? So that's what I guess my main point is, it's not about the degree. I would say that college is more about the network and the connections that you can make with the people that you surround yourself with within those environments.
You know, Dr. Black, were you going to say something?
Yeah. I want to agree with Kasim. Your network is big. That's one of the reasons why people go to college. That's why I went to my MBA school, you know. But one thing I advocate and I tell people, even though with all the schooling I've done, do whatever you want to become, do that level of education. And you don't even need education sometimes to, you know, Pierre said he didn't go to college, he didn't need that stuff. So why would you waste 4 years of your life to do something that you don't need just because people are pushing you towards it? If you can become whatever you want to become with just a high school diploma, or another thing I like to promote is vocational schools, like mechanics, plumbers, they make a lot of money at a young age too, that people don't promote and people don't know about. So do whatever makes you happy. Like I said, in my previous question, education is not the path for everyone. And don't misconstrue being educated with being intelligent. There are a lot of intelligent people that are not educated. And there are a lot of educated people that's fools. So always remember that.
I'll add a little bit to what the doctor said here too, for the young people that are listening, man. the thing is that you can build multi-million dollar businesses, right, by just starting yourself as an electrician, or starting yourself as a truck driver, or starting as a plumber. Again, if you have a plan, if you understand the importance of creating a roadmap, you becoming a plumber does not mean that your entire life is a plumber. You are much more than a plumber. Your plumber is how you generate revenue to take care of yourself and take care of your family, but it's not the end of it all for you. But however, by educating yourself, vocational school, understanding financial literacy, you can actually make six figures as a plumber and reinvest that money into real estate. And next thing you know, you start owning buildings, you start buying a block. I mean, the block that you live on. Again, same thing with truck driver. You can start as a truck driver, you know, your first year, probably starting with 50K, 65K a year. And after 2 years, you purchase your own truck. You can make $350,000 a year as an owner operator, you know, gross revenue. All of that, again, is, I believe, is once you can understand financial literacy, once you can understand how to let your money work for you and not working for money, then you have no problem at all. But understand, but first you have to get the money, right? So they always call this a chicken and the egg. Which one come first? Is it chicken or the egg? So first you have to get money first. And then at the next thing is, well, how do you multiply the money that you have? So again, it's not about having a degree. It's about having a roadmap. It's about having a plan. And I think one brother alluded that to that earlier is be approachable, be coachable, always ask for help. You understand? You can't find your true champion if you're not being yourself. So be yourself, be present, be coachable. And again, your destiny is in your hand. Do not put that into nobody else's hand. Nobody can make you do nothing that you don't want to do. Nobody can make your life a living hell only if you allow them.
Just to piggyback off of what all of the brothers just said, I would just also add, you know, being a lifetime learner. And I know that was one of the things that, you know, all of the gentlemen are exemplifying, just constantly learning and picking up a book, you know? And so there's so much information that you can learn if you're willing to do some research. So if you say, you know what, college is not necessarily for me, okay, maybe you don't want to sit through college, but if your goals and kind of the things that Dr. Blackman was saying is like, if your goals mean that you need to go to school, then listen, if that's your goal, then you're going to have to do it and it'll be over before you know it. But if your goal is not, if your goal is not connected with going to college, then that's not necessarily your path. But realize that you have to learn, though, you know, like you have to be open to learning. And so there are a lot of skills, like even if you go, you want to be a barber, right? You don't have to go to college and be a barber, but somebody's got to teach you. And so electrician, plumber, all of the things that they just said as well. But you have to be open to still saying, you know what, I may not go to college, but I am still open to learning. And if you're okay with picking up a book, all of the information is right there at your fingertips, you know?
Appreciate that, guys. Appreciate that. All right, our next one here is, what if you want to be something, but your family said to switch because they don't believe that you can do it?
A lot of people told me I want to become a doctor. You have to have belief in yourself more than other people have belief in you. You have to find someone that believes in you if you don't believe in yourself.
And I would definitely say something on to that point again. I think we're talking about the gentleman that asks, how do you, if they don't believe in you, I think that may have something to do with culture, right? And I think, and I could speak from my own personal experience as a Haitian immigrant, you know, like they say, if you're not a doctor or a lawyer or engineer, you're pretty much a loser, right? So, you know, my parents didn't believe in nothing else but that. So even me, when I decided that I'm no longer, you know, pursuing the dream of being a neurologist at the moment, you know, it broke my mother's heart because, again, that's what she wanted for me. They wanted me to be a doctor. They wanted me to be a lawyer. They wanted me to be an engineer. Again, keyword, that's what they wanted for me. So to that gentleman, I would definitely say, yes, it's okay to listen to your parents. They're paying the bill. They're providing you shelter. They're feeding you. I'm not telling you to be a rebel. But at the end of the day, I think it's okay to have those conversations with your parents now, whatever your culture is, and kind of really explain to them and talk to them about what you're passionate about, what it is that moves you, what is it that, you know, put a smile in your face, what is it that you would love to see. And I think the more we as children can become a little bit more comfortable of having those hard conversations with our parents, things become a lot easier, because a lot of times our parents want to live through our eyes. The things that they wanted to achieve, they couldn't achieve. They're really going to go 10x on us to achieve those things. So technically, they want us to live their dream. And I think it's not being a rebel to just be comfortable and have that conversation with your parent and say, hey, look, guys, I think you guys may want something here for me that you guys probably want for yourself, but this is not what I want. What if I go that route and X, Y, and Z happen? So just, I'll say, you know, again, just be very courteous. Just be curious with them also. Ask them exactly why is it that they don't believe in you. Is it something that you've done? Is it a bad grade that you got? Is it something that happened that, you know, they don't believe in you? Because I find that, you know, that's going to be very important for you, because If the people that at home don't believe in you, that can definitely have some negative impact on you. So you want to be very mindful of that and really explain to them how does that affect you? Because a lot of us, we end up hanging with the wrong crowd because we didn't have certain things at home. So, and that's any reason for any young children to lash out when they feel like not getting that support at home. So I would strongly suggest that you have that one-on-one with your mom, with your dad, with the family, and really understand why is it that they don't believe in you, and make a strong case on why you believe in yourself and why you're going to follow what it is that you want to do, whether they believe it or not. As long as you're not talking about going out there, hurting other people, you know, committing crimes, as long as you know you're doing something positive, don't let nobody, and I'm saying that, don't let nobody get in the way, not even your mother, not even your father. But be courteous, be mindful, and have that conversation with them, because at the end of the day, tomorrow, they may turn around to be a greater supporter, right? So they just want to understand where you're coming from. They want to understand why is this the route that you want to do? Why do you get a kick out of it? Just make yourself comfortable and have that conversation with them. And we need a lot of that in our community.
Everything that Pierre said, and I would just tell you guys, you know, realize there's a difference between a goal and a dream, you know, because a dream without a plan, you know, a goal without a plan is just a dream.
Yes.
So you have to have a roadmap. You have to be able to really sit down and explain to someone else your thoughts, you know, and that's what a business plan may look like, right? And so, or that elevator pitch. And so you have to really say, okay, you know, I want to accomplish X, Y, and Z, and these are the plans and the steps and the things that I'm going to do in order to get me to that place. And sometimes when people actually hear it, whether it's your loved ones, your friends, they go, wow, I see it. You know, like you really thought this all the way out. And like, you know, Pierre said, I know in the past when I was younger, my mom was like, look, I want you to go to school because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go to school. You're supposed to graduate, get a degree. And I was like, nah, mom, really going to do this. And she was like, all right, you know, and I see it. And she sees me going out there every day and I'm talking to school. She's like, you're really doing it. I'm showing her, look, these are the invoices. And she, wow. You know, like, and so they start to see your passion, your ambition, your drive, and they'll be your biggest cheerleaders. And next thing you know, they'd be telling people like, oh, my son is like, you know, but you're going to have those naysayers too, who are going to tell you like, look, nah, I don't see it, bro. I don't see it. Like I'm talking about, yeah, I want to help save kids. And they're like, yeah, good luck, man. Them dudes ain't going to listen. But, you know, 20 years later, I get people to say, yo, I appreciate what you did for me. And so, you know, understand there are going to be people who are not going to see your vision. And that's OK, you know, because it's your vision. But have a plan, though. So that separates it from a dream to something attainable. All right. And understand, be ready to pivot, because there are going to be obstacles that are going to, you know, get thrown in the midst of your plan, because that's what life is. But, you know, stick to it. You can do it. Perseverance. And one thing I've learned is manage your time properly. Time management is so key, you know, so you can't be like, you guys want to play video games and that's cool. You want to be on social media. That's cool. You know, well, just like you want to do that, carve out time for your studies and carve out time to do other things. So manage your time properly.
Appreciate that, guys. Great advice. Are there any expectations that you guys had for your career path that you chose that deferred from reality in both good or bad ways? So meaning like you had an expectation of what it was going to be like and it was a little different when you started.
I would just say for me, my expectation is when I first started doing this, and I think you and I were just talking about this the other day, Pascal, is when I first started, I was like, yeah, every time I walk into a school, I step into a classroom, man, I'm changing lives every day. I'm crushing it. And, you know, there were kids that I was, you know, I would say, listen, I'm going to try to save 100. And the older heads, you know, they would say, listen, if you could just save one, you did your job. And I was like, nah, nah, nah. And over the years, that's been a humbling experience. Like you realize, listen, if you are impactful and really make a difference in the life of one kid, one at a time, you're doing your numbers. And so that to me has been the thing that I just thought, yeah, I just thought this was going to be a lot easier. But you realize that people are complex, you know? And so, and that's where the forgiveness for me has always played a role. Like, don't beat up on yourself. You're doing it. It's making a difference. And just in the moments when you think, nah, it's not, everything is not going right. You get that phone call, you get that email and just like, and they say, yo, I appreciate it. So just stay, hang in there, man. It is, is worth it, you know? So just don't give up.
All right. Yes, sir. This one is for Kasim. Someone said in a previous question that they are the oldest of their siblings. To that person, I would like to know, how did they navigate the pressure of being the oldest and always being looked up to?
I'll probably say the thing to help me navigate the most was just being transparent. I think it's very important to like be transparent with your siblings. So when things are not going well, you can say things are not going well. Because when you do, I think Hashim said this earlier, is that like all things will pass, right? So when they do see you persevere through other situations, that makes it more realistic for them and how to live their own life. If you try to keep this front up, like everything is good all the time and you're always successful, everything is always good, it's not going to correlate to your siblings. And they're going to look at their failures like huge failures now because they never saw you fail ever. So being transparent it takes a lot of the pressure off. You can say, hey, you know, I did this. This is a mistake. Now I'm 5 steps behind where I wanted to be at, but I got to get up and I got to move forward. And when they make mistakes, they'll come to you with their mistakes and they'll use your experiences to live through you. But you have to be transparent. Nobody's perfect. You know what I'm saying? My path to get to where I am right now, it wasn't like smooth at all. Like there was a lot of ups and downs. I'm not even in the career that, you know, my college career was destined for. So it's like, this was definitely not a smooth trajectory to where I'm at right now. Even within the financial lane, it's like the first few years, it's like you get into the industry, I guess we'll go back to the last question. You get into the industry, you think it's going to be easy. You think, oh, it's going to be simple. I'm going to get on a phone, call a few people. They're going to send me millions of dollars. I'm going to be rich. No problem. And then it's like you get hung up on 100,000 times on 100,000 calls. And you're like, maybe I made the wrong decision. You know what I mean? So you just have to be real with yourself. You have to know to set like little goals for yourself, set little accomplishments that will help you to realize that, you know, that you're making progress. Be transparent when things don't go wrong, figure out why they went wrong and learn from your mistakes and keep moving.
Appreciate that, Kasim. Appreciate all the questions, man. We got a lot of great questions out there. This next one is for everybody. What is success to you?
I guess I'll start with that, right? So success for me is not really a destination. I more so think about success as like milestones. So I like to constantly think that I am successful. Like I am a walking, living, breathing success as I speak right now because of where I am, period. So I don't have an actual goal to get to reach success. It's because I'm where I am right now, I am successful. And then tomorrow, if I have a successful tomorrow, I'll be successful tomorrow as well. And then if I hit this goal that's 2 days out from now, I'm successful again. So I more so think about success as like ringing the bell. You know what I'm saying? Like how many times can I ring the success bell? It's not about me reaching like a mountain peak of success, because if I was to set that as my goal, I wouldn't be where I am right now, because my vision of success when I was 21 or 22 was a lot different from where it is right now. So if I would have kind of set that as the pinnacle, then I would be miles and miles beneath where I am right now. So I like to think of success as something that I'm always constantly trying to achieve. And I set little goals so that way that along the way, I can pat myself on the back and keep moving forward.
Good stuff. I'll go real quick. For me, my success is much more personal. And I think Hasim got to that is, if I could save one brother from the hood and turn his life around and not go through the jail system, not go through the gang system, and actually becoming a good brother, a good leader in that community, I'm successful. That's what success looks like for me is, how many people can I go back to my community and equip them with the knowledge, with the blueprint that I've learned myself in businesses, how to build relationship, how to carry myself, how to be accountable. If I can teach a young Black man, a young Black woman, or any young man or any woman of any background, if I can teach one individual how to become a better friend, a better father, a better leader for their community, to me, that is how I gauge my success metric. That's what I call successful. Notice that I didn't say the money, y'all, because the money comes in going out. I'm pretty sure a lot of y'all was probably waiting for somebody to say, yeah, when I have $20 million in my account. Sorry if that was the answer that you was looking for. And I don't think you're going to get that here, because we all clearly understand money does not equate success.
Mm-hmm. So I mentioned before how I feel when I wake up in the morning, But success means to me doing what I love. That's what basically my whole point is. I love what I do. I won't change it for anything, regardless if I was getting paid $20 million or $50,000.
Mm-hmm. I would say, I think it's right up there with all of what the brother said is, for me, it's real peace, you know, because you can have everything and be extremely popular and then still feel alone and you like, this is not making sense. I thought when I had the Benz, I thought when I had the house, I thought I had everything, I was going to feel rich. And you like, why am I still feeling empty? Something is not right. I'm missing something, you know? And so, so to me, it's like really finding that peace. And maybe that comes from doing what you love, you know, or maybe that comes from what Pierre said, as far as like, you know, really know that you're impacting people's lives in a real positive way. And so for me, it's kind of that piece of just like, it's all working out right. And just everything else that they just said.
Appreciate that, guys. Man, I think we covered everyone's questions, man. Thank you everybody for asking all those great questions. We are about to wrap up. Can't believe y'all stayed all this time, man. Especially some of my students. I'm shocked. we are about to wrap up. I do want, as we close out, if you guys can leave us with final thoughts and then a direct way that people on the call, VIP access, can directly connect to you if they are entrepreneurs themselves, if they have businesses that they want to do, or if they have more questions about a career path or whatever, or if their parents want to contact you, if there's a direct way that they can contact you. So we'll go around, you can give us final thoughts and then direct contact.
For my final thought, like I said, you know, education is not intelligence, and find what you're passionate about and do what you love.
In closing, man, I would definitely say, look, you guys are definitely the future. My son is 4 and 1 is 4, 1 is 5, and my daughter is 12. So definitely, I'm not sure the change that I'm looking for in this world, that we may have an opportunity to see it. I mean, granted, if it does happen, I'll be happy. But if not, I want you guys to understand that you guys are leading the next generation, right? And we are counting on you. My children are counting on you. Our ancestors are counting on you. So again, when you go out there and face this world, remember, don't face this world alone. You have a group of people that believe in you. You have a group of people that set the path, that set the foundation for you. And you have to hold that accountability and know that, hey, look, our ancestors did not get us this far just to get us this far. The God that we serve did not just get us this far just to get us this far. So always remember, even when you feel like, you know, you're losing the battle, even if you feel like you're out of breath, even if you feel like, you know, you just can't stand anymore, I promise you, look deep down inside and throw that last punch. We all have that one last swing, and that one last swing always makes the difference. So always find that last swing within yourself. And I put my information on there. I put my email address there. So anybody, same thing, you know, just put in subject where we met. And definitely after, once you guys send me an email, you'll follow with a calendar link to get on my calendar. And I also put my Instagram there as well, which is PLAGear_5, which is one of my favorite social media platform, which is I go live on almost every other day, and I talk about community building. I talk about transportation. I'm always talking about trucking on Instagram. So that's definitely a way you can connect with me. So looking forward to connect with anyone here.
My closing comments is this. First of all, it was just a real pleasure to really meet Pierre, Kasim, Dr. Blackman. And one thing I've learned is, so many people I kind of looked up to, you realize they are public success, but private failures. You know, publicly, they look like they got it all together. But behind closed doors, they're Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, two totally different people. Be consistent who you are, you know? Sometimes there are people who will come and they are nice to strangers, but they are disrespectful at home to people, you know? Be transparent, be real, and you know, you will go far by yourself, but you will go further with other people. You know, you can't go but so far in this world by yourself. Whatever issues that you have dealt with in your past, the trauma, the heartache, just realize these were things that are not defining who you are, but these were not losses, these were lessons, you know? And so sometimes we go through some difficult things and we have a tendency to use these things as crutches, and we use these things as excuse as to why we can't overcome, and poor woe is me, you know? So if you see me come into your school and I'm in a wheelchair, I'm in crutches, like, this is just a visual reminder, like, look, if I can do it, you can do it, you know? And so no excuses, man, no excuses. But at the same time, listen, if you are dealing with something, please don't hesitate to ask for help, you know? Don't hesitate to ask for help. And just make sure that you realize that all of the things that you go through, these are things that are just will make your life even easier later on in life, because hard times and suffering are just a part of life. You know, somebody told me years ago when in raising my children, they were telling me, if you want to make life hard for your children, make it easy for them, you know? And I thought that was real heavy, you know? So sometimes we think when a kid has everything and you give them everything, that you making their life so much easier. And look, you say, oh, you know, you don't want them to fall. You don't want them to do this. You don't want them to do that. But believe it or not, all of those bumps and bruises is just preparing you for life, man. You know, so you guys will make it. Just consistently do your work, consistently study, consistently eat right, consistently take care of your body. All of these things play a role, not just for you as a teenager, but as you grow into adulthood. So eat right, take care of yourselves, ask for help, the whole person, you know, and don't be fixated on just the money. I know you want to get the bag, but that's only one compartment of who you are. All right. So it's a pleasure to meet everybody, and you guys will do well. And my contact information, Instagram, my email, don't hesitate to reach out. And thank you again.
My closing statement, I think the biggest advice that I could say as a kind of closing remark is just network with a lot of people, talk to a lot of people, get a lot of experience. Don't be afraid to ask a lot of questions. People that are truly successful want to make other people successful as well. Mm-hmm. Nobody here, and you can see that from this panel in itself. Everybody here is successful in their own right. And if you came to them with a question, they want to see the best for you. People that are actually successful also want to see you win. So there's never a reason to feel like you can't reach out to somebody or talk to somebody. Shoot your shot. You know what I mean? If you have questions, ask, reach out, ask to shadow somebody, ask to intern with somebody. A lot of these people that want to see you, everybody wants to see you successful. So I would just say network, put yourself out there. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I also put my contact information in the chat. My Instagram is honestly probably the best way to reach me. My Instagram is at @KasimEllis_. Same thing with me. If you have questions, DM me, reach out. Say you came from Mr. G and, you know, you get that VIP treatment, you know. But, you know, ask questions, reach out to people, get a lot of exposure, get outside of your bubble, get outside of the bubble, get as much exposure to other things as possible. And like I said, people that are truly doing well will want to see you do well also.
That's right. Appreciate you guys. And I want to add too with Kasim, we do have a former student that connected with Kasim and is working with Kasim and is doing really, really well right now. So, you know, all these things are a call away, a text away, an email away. Everybody here is reachable and you never know who's going to help you. What a lot of people don't talk about is that most people that are successful have mentors, people that already done it, looking out for them and giving them tips and advice and, you know, teaching them each step of the way. So, you know, if they can have it, you guys can have it too. So don't hesitate to hit them up and don't look at them like, yo, these guys are working with celebrities and, you know, I can't contact them. I'm nobody. Don't do that. Just if you have something in your head, even if you have a simple question like about business or your career, whatever it is, just hit them up, send them an email, and I'm sure they'll respond. If they don't, holler at me. I'll make sure they respond and we'll figure it out. So appreciate all of you guys coming through, the brothers. And I know y'all might be wondering like, yo, where are all the sisters at? Don't worry, we got y'all. I appreciate everybody for coming on. Appreciate the guys, man, sharing y'all stories, keeping it real. I wish we could do this every day, man. I wish, you know, this was just the norm where we can share and, you know, learn from each other. Everybody here is still on, you know, meaning that, you know, you guys are definitely absorbing the message, or y'all would have bounced. I know y'all keep it real, so y'all would have bounced. So I appreciate everybody for coming. I appreciate the questions. And I think, we know, we all learned something today, including myself. And just something to think about with everybody, man. Everybody had a starting point. Just because you live in a, you know, difficult circumstance right now, if you have a vision of the future and there's something that you want to do, nobody has the ability to stop you. The only person that can stop you is you. All right. And we're giving y'all resources and just, you know, information. So you have that support as well right now. And everybody that spoke today has been on the Mastermind program. So you can listen to their full story and get even more gems through the program. So again, thank you for coming through. And of course, our mind, your mind, is the most powerful tool in the universe. Therefore, if you can think it, you can do it. If you believe in it, you can be it. And if you fight for it, you can have it. The world is yours. This has been your host, Mr. G, and I will see you next time on Mastermind.